All right. Welcome, everyone, on peoplesinternetradio.com. And I am also on PSN Radio. And I'm on the Liberty Beacon Radio Network as well. Simulcasting on three different radios at one time on the internet, live. I'm Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel the Cabal. I have a very special guest tonight, which I know virtually nothing about. So I am actually just going to introduce my guest. He is an author. His name is Jack Barr, and I'm going to let him explain a little bit about himself and his family, and we will talk about his book from there. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Thanks, Steve. I'm happy to be here.
You're very welcome. You are over in the on the other side of the world, and you're 12 hours difference from me. It's very early in the morning over there, and we've had quite a bit of trouble connecting and communicating with each other, but we finally did about 20 minutes ago. And I mentioned to you that I know virtually nothing about you or your book, so maybe we could just talk about a little bit of a biography first.
Sure, that'd be great. Basically, my wife and I, we are from the States. I'm originally from North Carolina, and she's from Tennessee. And we met in college in Tennessee. Dated for about a year, and at that time we both spent time working overseas. I was in Mongolia for about 3 months, and she was in Australia for about 3 months. So we both felt like that once we got married and finished our degrees that we wanted to work overseas and be teachers. That's sort of what our desire was, to be teachers and to work outside the States. So once we got married and finished our graduate degrees, we started looking at different schools. Puerto Rico, Thailand, Guam, Korea, and we actually ended up moving to Thailand. The main reason was we really liked the school here and the mission that they had. It's a Christian school. All the teachers are Christian, but most of the students are not. So it was a good opportunity for us to share about God's love and also being a quality school. So we moved here about 9 years ago. And I was the athletic director and taught high school PE, and my wife was a kindergarten teacher. And then about 3 years ago, my wife got pregnant with our first child. Everything was good. We had a good pregnancy and didn't have many complications. But when she was born, about 3 days later, when we were getting ready to leave the hospital, they told us she might have Down syndrome. And sort of living in Thailand, and the doctors are Thai and were foreigners, they were trying to be very delicate about the situation. They didn't want to tell us anything for sure. They said maybe she had a few indicators that might suggest she had Down syndrome, but she had other indicators that suggest she might not. So they told us they wanted to do a blood test, and like anything else in Thailand, it takes a long time. So it took about 2 weeks. We waited 2 weeks to know if our child had Down syndrome or not. And after that happened, we went in and saw the doctor, and she told us for sure that Marley, our daughter, had Down syndrome. And that sort of sent me into a deep depression for about a year. And during that time, it was really difficult for our family. And that's sort of what sort of prompted me to write the book. That's sort of the angle I go from. I talk about struggling with my faith. We'd gone to a Christian school. We decided to be missionaries, serve overseas. But yet my daughter was being born with a something that I saw as a terrible genetic effect. And I go into the book about thoughts of suicide and the things I went through there, and thoughts of leaving my wife. And that sort of is the basis of the book. It's about my struggle that first year and what I learned from that. And the help I received from other families, and then how it made me really think about some stuff in my past that I had not dealt with, different things that happened through middle school, high school, and college that were really building up, and I was sort of suppressing. And I guess my daughter being born was the final push that caused me to reach my breaking point, I guess you would say. So when that happened, I wrote the book, and since then I've read an article for CNN that gained some publicity. We've also started a website. It's called If It Had a Voice. It's a video and a website that just sort of discusses Down syndrome and the different things that are involved with that, and maybe some fears we have that are not realistic, and what that community is about. So the book is sort of just one factor of the things that we're doing, and that's sort of how it came about.
Well, as a lot of us that actually don't, well, I'm a researcher mainly, Jack. So a lot of people that that have children with Down syndrome don't really know that it is not a life-threatening disorder, and it's not really a, I guess what's the word I'm searching for? It's not really a terrible disorder to have a child with, to deal with. I'm sure as you have lived these past months and years, you've probably come to find that out yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, actually, you know, growing up, I grew up in the South, and the school I went to, there weren't many kids with special needs, and there were a few, but it was a small town, and it was something that wasn't really talked about, or there wasn't a lot of interaction there. And so throughout my entire life, I didn't really spend a lot of time in the special needs community. And I think when I got that news from the doctor, it was more of a fear of the unknown, and realizing that my child would maybe be broken or be a monster or be someone that wasn't able to do anything. And a lot of that was just preconceived notion that I had developed myself. It was unrealistic. She's 3 years now, almost four. And I mean, she is behind in some things, but a lot of ways she's just like any other kid here in our neighborhood. And she has friends, and she goes to school, and she plays, and she runs. And a lot of it was just fear that I built on something that wasn't really there. I mean, there are definitely challenges, and there are things that we probably have to do that most parents don't have to do. But it's definitely not something that is a daily burden or something that is a daily struggle. Just recently, I write a blog, and recently I came across a famous scientist, and he was talking about how Down syndrome children and Down syndrome adults is just a life of suffering. And that's really not true, at least for my daughter, my experiences. She enjoys life, and she enjoys the greatness of life. And she's like any typical four-year-old. Just last night, she had a tantrum and broke down and cried because she couldn't watch any more TV, you know, just like any other child. So it was definitely something that I've learned. It's different, but, you know, every child is different. And she definitely has a quality life right now, and she's making an impact that I never thought that one of my children would make, or even that I've made in society.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the book some more. What is the name of the book?
Yeah, sorry. The book is entitled Failing at Fatherhood, and you can it's on Amazon, it's on Kobe, it's on a lot of different outlets. You can find it pretty much anywhere online, and you can also order paperback. The book basically, it begins with that event of Marley being diagnosed with Down syndrome, and me trying to understand that, and trying to understand how that would affect my life. And then it ventures back into things that I dealt with as a child, sexual abuse, my own father dying when I was 18, he died from cancer, really questioning God and faith and Christianity and what that means. And then it takes you through the journey of reconciliation that I've had. And I'm very honest in the book. I don't pretend all things are great now and my life is perfect. I take you through some really difficult emotional things that I dealt with, and even now still wrestling with and still trying to understand. And that's sort of the outline of the book. It sort of takes it from my troubles from the beginning all the way till now, and things that I found that have helped me, things that might help other people, because that was the main thing that helped me that first year. Almost every morning I was calling a family in the States or in India or in Canada and just talking to them, and what is it like to raise a child with Down syndrome, and what can I expect, and how is this, you know, possible, and how to keep my marriage, and it really helped me a lot. It was amazing support that I received. And I thought there's a lot of couples that are separating or families falling apart. And I wanted to try to do something to help that and be part of it and say, I thought the worst, I wanted to do the worst, I thought the worst about my own wife, my own child. But, through God's grace and counseling and really digging into my soul and working through these things, I've been able to survive. And I wanted to just share that with other families.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions or preconceptions? What are some of the biggest fears that that people, fathers and mothers, have of Down syndrome?
I would say for me is the fear that your child won't be able to do anything. Growing up, I played baseball. I got a scholarship. I was a pitcher. My wife is a high-level gymnast. I actually had a Division I scholarship. And when Marley was born with Down syndrome, I feel like my mind suddenly raced to she would be a person that couldn't achieve anything in life. She would be a person I would always have to care for. She would be a person that would be mocked. She would be a person that would be teased. And some of those things are true, but some of those things are true for any child or any person.
Yes, they are.
You know, myself included, I remember times I was mocked and teased. And I think as parents, when we are told from the very beginning that our child is going to be different, for some reason, every dream we had for that child evaporates. And we think that life for our child will be hopeless. And that's just not true. The more I research, whether it's Down syndrome or autism or a physical handicap, there's people making huge differences in this world through their disabilities or overcoming their disabilities. And I think the initial shock of it makes us think that we are going to be part of something that won't be amazing. And it has been. Marley has changed my life. She's changed our marriage. Of course, you know, she's probably not going to be a basketball or a softball or a football star, but I mean, she's already been part of things that I never even imagined and things that I would never have been part of. I'd have never had a book. An article would have never been on CNN. I wouldn't be doing this radio interview if she hadn't come into our life. And I think once we get past that initial shock, we've got to work through that depression. We've got to work through those ideas. And then as society, we have to see that every life is important and everyone matters. People can make a difference regardless of what their disabilities are or what their strengths or weaknesses are. And that's what she's taught me. And that's what I would say to the listeners is trying to realize that maybe a person may not look like us or may not act like us or we may even label as disabled, but they still can make a difference and they can still impact other lives. And at the end of the day, I feel like that's what we're really called to do is to make an impact in this society.
Absolutely. I really can't remember when the first time I ever seen or heard of Down syndrome, Jack, but I do recall now, looking back on it, many, many years ago, I think that there was a young man that was an actor, and he happens to have Down syndrome, and you know, he hasn't been a very, very successful actor, but he is an actor, and he has done parts in movies and TV shows, and I think that may have been possibly been the first time I ever got introduced to it, and since then, over the years, I've seen many people are just around in my area or in my travels around the United States, people with Down syndrome that actually lead somewhat productive lives. They don't really need the caring for like a lot of other children or people that are actually handicapped.
Yeah, that's true. I know which actor you're referring to, and like I said, like when I started doing research, it was amazing to see some of the things that people with disabilities have accomplished and what they're doing in society. And I think it goes back, at least for me, the idea that this almost competition edge we have, or people being better than other people, or you know, whether it be in sports or academics or music, and figuring out what we're called to do and what we're supposed to do in the society around us and in our community. Really, some of the most talented people we have might be labeled as a little bit different or not exactly, I guess, quote-unquote, what we'd call a normal person. But I learned really fast that I'm sort of glad that my daughter's not labeled as a normal person. I hate to think that she'd go through life and just have a plain life of, you know, going to college, getting married, having children, and not really making an impact. And as difficult it is to accept that she has Down syndrome, it's been as rewarding to know that she's making an impact and that she's filling a role that she's been called to fill. And whenever I see her not able to do things that the kids aren't able to do, I think about that, and I think about what a blessing it is to see how she is overcoming the disability, even though she doesn't really know it at age 3, but she's overcoming it and doing something that's making an impact on other people's lives. And to be honest, it's probably a lot more than I've done in my 35 years. And even though I'm classified as normal or regular or however you want to say that, in the grand scheme of things, she's probably already done a lot more than I have in building relationships and filling that role.
Well, I think children especially don't really have preconceived fears and preconceived notations about other people. They pretty much have to find out for themselves, and you know, there's going to be questions from other children and stuff like that. You're just going to have to, I don't know, you're just going to have to wing it, I think. At least I would think you're just going to have to wing it anyways. Is that what you and your wife
yeah.
are doing?
Yeah, we already had that happen just the other day. I was at the playground, and Marley, that's my daughter's name, her language is behind the other kids. And, you know, there's this little girl there, maybe 7 or 8, and she was trying to talk to Marley, and Marley was trying to talk back, and she just came up to me, and she was like, "Why can't your daughter speak?" And I said, "Well, she can some. She's just behind." And she said, "Okay." And then she just went on and kept playing with her and kept doing what they were doing. It was just a simple, she had a simple question, it was a simple answer, and life moved on. And it was sort of humorous to watch and just to see that, you know, maybe she can't keep up in the conversation, but we can still keep playing and doing exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. I do remember all the teasing I got, and I was considered normal myself. You know, I do recall some of the kids in school that were special needs. They didn't really have any special needs in my little area, probably up until the 90s or something like that. But there was one, I believe he probably has Down syndrome, but I'm not positive. He was a couple years older. I'm sorry, he was probably one grade ahead of me, but it seems like he was a couple, maybe 2-3 years older than me. So he didn't really have a lot of problems, but he had a lot of kids that teased him, and he never really understood it. But well, you know, that's just a memory from the past. There, we all have them.
Yeah, even myself included. I write about this in my book about an incident in middle school, and we were teasing this girl, and sort of the same. I wasn't quite sure what her disability was, and we sort of strung her along, and, you know, she liked one of us, and we sort of fed on that, and we were being extremely mean. And I write about in the book, the reason I was doing that was because I wanted acceptance. That seemed to be the thing to do to gain acceptance into my peer group and establish myself as popular. And I never really thought about her feelings. I never really thought about the damage that we were doing, about her going home. And at the end of the day, I write about this, it was just me wanting to be better than her. I didn't see her as an equal, and I didn't respect her. And looking back on that, you know, it's difficult to share those type of things and admit to being those type of bullies. And I feel like, especially now when I see it happen to my child, it's a difficult thing. And, you know, bullying is something that I see even at our school. It doesn't have to be disabilities with any of our kids. And it's something that we don't realize at that moment how painful it can be and how hurtful it can be. And that's something I've had to accept. And we're preparing Marley for that. You know, there'll be times that she'll be bullied and she'll be teased. And how she's going to respond to that, and what, how are we going to respond as parents? And I have those memories, too, that times that I probably was not the person I should have been. And it's difficult to think back to those times and think about where are they now and what type of impact does it have by caring about my popularity more than the feelings of that girl.
Yes. Well, I believe children, school-age children, I think they mainly tease because of fear the fear of the unknown. I think they also tease from jealousy. You know, maybe not so much from a Down syndrome child or anything like that, but bully. I didn't really mean tease. I meant bully from fear and jealousy. And that's really a shame because that is mainly brought upon the parents of that child on who a bully is.
Yeah, I agree. And usually the kids that we see bullying at our school, there's something else there. Like you said, there's another underlying factor or another sense of acceptance that they're not feeling themselves. They see a need to gang up on another kid or use that kid as an escape to maybe take away some of the own struggles that they're having themselves.
Oh, yes. Yes, I totally agree there, Jack. I know lots of children, lots of kids that bullied other children just because of their own insecurities, their own downfalls, and their own their own faults. Somehow it I guess maybe it gives them the image or impression that they are somewhat better or somehow better than the child that they're bullying. Your daughter doesn't, you said she's almost four, or she is four?
Yes, sir. She'll turn four in March 19th.
Oh, that's not too far away then. How is her life so far then?
It's been really good. We are in a community here of other Christian teachers and a lot of families. And the great thing is they see her as Marley. They don't see her as the girl with Down syndrome. There's very few special needs children at our school or in our community. And it's been a great community to be in. They've been very supportive. And all the kids that she hangs out with, they see her as Marley. And you know, even the parents, they don't really treat her any different. And that's been very encouraging. That's one reason we like where we are and what we're doing, because we feel like she's experienced the same struggles as the other kids, and she's experienced the same triumphs as the other kids, and she goes to school with everyone else, and I guess just being a parent of a kid with special needs, it's always satisfying or encouraging when you see your child just being with other kids, just hanging out with other quote-unquote normal kids, and getting to experience that as a parent. Before Molly was born, you know, I wanted her to be a great basketball player or, you know, a great politician or actress or something. And it's funny, now I just want her to sort of fit in, almost going back to what we were talking about with bullying. I just want her to be just one of the other kids and just to just be there and be treated as just anyone else and not be treated differently just because she may act or talk or look a little bit different. So it's been really encouraging here, and it's been very humbling for these other families to accept us and to accept our kids, because a lot of times that doesn't happen, especially here in Thailand. A lot of times when families have children with special needs, their families sort of shun them or disown them, and we've met a lot of Thai families here where they're by themselves. It's just the core family, and there's very little support from the extended family and even schools. It's sort of sad. So we've been very fortunate and grateful for the community and acceptance we've had here and at our international school and our international community.
Do you think that's a cultural thing?
Yes, absolutely. We love Thailand and we love the Thai people, but they hold to a belief of karma. So inside that belief system, because the country is mostly Buddhist, inside that belief system, most people view people with special needs as doing something wrong in a previous life. So when they see Marley, they believe that she did something in a previous life, or that Jen and I did something in a previous life, and that now we're being punished for it. So they see it as something they don't want to be around, something they don't want to be part of, because they have this belief system that the reason your child has a disability is because there is something that's happened in your previous life or in this life, and you're now being punished for it. And Marley's now being punished for it. So it's a little bit different worldview, and that causes some friction and some problems where a lot of your disabled kids in Thailand are actually in separate schools or in separate communities. And it's definitely improving in Thailand, but it's definitely very far behind, I would call, the Western world, how they embrace disabilities and people with a handicap.
Yeah, I've actually put a link in here that one of the listeners in the chat room wanted me to pass to you. It's a video you could probably watch after the show here, Scott. I'm not sure what it's about. He said something about there's really no disability, so I'm not sure what's going to happen with that video. But anyways, I think, are you and your wife trying to educate people over there on what this affliction is?
Yeah, we actually do quite a bit of that. My wife is involved with a couple of organizations here that try to bring awareness to special needs and bring understanding to disabilities. Myself, I'm involved with a lot of things at our school with our kids and talking to them about Marley and about Down syndrome and about that process. And the other thing we're doing, of course, is the website, If They Had a Voice. And what that's based around is the video of an unborn child speaking to their mother. And because I don't know if you know this, but the Down syndrome abortion rate is over 90%. So basically, most mothers that find out that they're carrying a child with Down syndrome, about 90% of them are aborted. And what we've tried to do is put together some support and resources to help them just reconsider that and just to think about what life is really going to be like once that child is born. Not what society tells them, not what traditional medical community might tell them, but to really do some research and really try to see what life is going to be like having a child with Down syndrome. And we do that when we come to the States every summer. We travel around and speak. And of course, promoting the book, that's part of it. But it's sort of like you were talking about earlier, really getting a firm reality on what it's going to be like and not having some vision of a horrific nightmare or something that's not possible or something where your life is going to drastically change. Your life does change, but having any child, your life is going to change. That's just reality of having children. But it doesn't change as much as people think, and it's not the horrendous situation that people believe it is. So, sorry to go back to your question. We're trying to do a lot of that, not only here in Thailand, but also in the States through various outlets and various opportunities. And we're very honest when we do that, and we're very open, and we say, you know, our life is different. But just because it's different doesn't mean that it's worse. And a lot of times, because it's different, it's actually helped us learn some things and change some things in our own life that might have needed changing through Marley and through being more active in the special needs community and talking to families and trying to bring awareness to what it's really like to not only have a child with Down syndrome, but to be friends with someone with Down syndrome or to eat dinner with someone that has Down syndrome or to live a life with someone that has Down syndrome.
Well, you know, I guess some people will have a struggle with that and others won't. 90% abortion rate for mothers that knowingly have Down syndrome, that's really a shame. Because people like I happen to mention, they are capable of having productive lives, unless there's some type of brain damage, and that can happen to someone that's so-called normal too.
Yeah, and you know, life is unpredictable. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, that's sort of the nature of the beast. You're going, like you said, you could have a child that's completely healthy and have some horrific accident. And for me, what I really struggled with, and it took a lot of time, and it took a lot of, I would say, wrestling with God and fighting and arguing, is do I believe that every life matters or do I not? And that's really what it all comes down to, in my opinion. You either believe that every life is important, regardless of...
Oops, kind of lost him there. Are you back there, Jack? Hello.
All right, yes.
Okay. I lost you there for a few seconds.
Sorry, our connection may go out. That's another joy of living overseas.
Yeah, that's
electricity,
okay.
Internet.
That's okay.
Is going to go in and out.
Yeah, you don't really have to turn your video on again there if you don't want to. It was taking up some bandwidth and it was making your audio kind of choppy there. So
Okay, is it better now?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It cleaned right up there.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'll just leave it off.
Go ahead and continue. I'm not sure what you were talking about there a few seconds ago, but...
Okay. Sorry about that. I'll just start over. I said, for me, it took a long time wrestling and struggling and even, I would say, fighting with God and my own beliefs. And I said, in my opinion, what it comes down to is you either believe every life is important or you don't. And that's what I've been dealing with, and I talk about in the book, regardless of your race or your age or your disability, you either come down on the side that you believe every life matters and that they have a purpose, or you believe they don't. And that's sort of what I've realized is the root of my struggle. Is growing up, I didn't really believe that every life was important. I didn't believe that every life could make a difference. And now, through a lot of soul searching and crying and fighting, I believe that now. I believe no matter what's happening or what your disability is or where you are, your life has a purpose, and that you are called to do something with your life. And if it's a disability, then you have a certain calling to do something regardless of your disability. And if you are a completely healthy person, you have a calling and your life matters. And that's sort of where I've come down on the whole issue. And I really believe that now. And I try to live life like that, with the belief that every person has a calling in this life, and they have a purpose that they need to fulfill. And I'm trying to do that for myself, do that for my family, and help other fathers, especially that may be broken and struggling because their child has a disability, to help them understand that it's not easy, and you don't have to completely accept it, but your child has a purpose, and you're going to see that purpose the longer you stick with it and you stay there and you be a father.
Well, you're absolutely right. You certainly do have to get over the fears, the misconceptions, the preconceptions, and go on with the struggle, if you will.
Yes, and I mean, struggles are going to come regardless. Like you said earlier, you know, whether it be when one's first born, or a heart disease, or cancer, or divorce, or death. I mean, life is a struggle, and you just you live the life that you have.
Okay, I lost you a little bit again there. Okay, everyone, I lost him. Getting a little bit of a bad signal going on here and there. I'm going to put a little song on and see if I can get him back. All right, everyone. I got my guest, Jack Barr, back, so we're going to continue on here. His Skype got a little wobbly there, and it cut out on him, so I popped the song on there for a minute. But let's continue on, Jack. And I forgot again where we were at, what you were talking about.
I'm going to be honest, I forgot too, Steve. Sorry about that.
Well, I do recall the last thing I told you, what... was people really have? I do agree with you that all life is precious to me, anyways, and that is just my opinion. That's not held by everyone that I know, and you know, they all have their opinions. But you were starting to express yours. You had to do a lot of soul searching, and you now think that all life is precious, also.
Yes. And I think that's what I was saying before we got disconnected again. Sorry about that. It happens a lot here. The internet goes in and out. But I just had to come down to the idea: either every life mattered or every life didn't, and that I can't measure Marley's life by how well she can play a sport or how well she can do math homework or how well she can do any type of task. It came down to, in her, live the life that she's called to be, push her to be a better person, but understand that she has a calling and a purpose in this life. And going back to the book, that's what I really try to do, especially for fathers, because the book is geared towards fathers, trying to help them understand that no matter what the disability might be or the handicap that their child might have, that child is special and that child has a purpose. I don't mean special because they have a disability. I mean special because they have a role to fill, and that they are going to do something. And the longer you stay there, you're going to see that. The divorce rate with special needs is about 70%. And a lot of that is the father leaving. I mean, that's an epidemic regardless for our society. And one of the biggest things I realized early on is no matter how I feel or how upset I was about Marley having Down syndrome, I had a role to be there for her and to be there as her father. And coming to an understanding that her life mattered and her life was important helped me stay with my family and stay with my wife to be part of that and to help her reach her full potential and help other people understand the value of her life and what she is capable of doing.
Yeah. I have an off the wall question for you, Jack. How long did it take you and your wife to learn a new language over there?
Well, actually, it's still happening. It's been 9 years now, and we're still trying to learn the language. We can speak basic Thai. One thing that has really hurt us, but it's also been good, is working in an international school. The primary language is English. So our school is almost like a private school in the States. We're fully accredited by the Western Association. Most of our kids go to college in America. So we have AP courses. Our entire curriculum is based on the States, and we're seen as an American-based school. So for students to enter our school, they have to be proficient in English. And to be honest, most of our kids by the time they graduate are probably more proficient than I am from a grammatical standpoint. So the Thai language, we don't use it as much except when we're out in public. And we're fairly fluent to get around, to communicate, to order food. But it's been very difficult. Thai is a tonal language. So what that means is you can have the same word for five different items, but it just changes the tone. It can either be up or down or a flat tone. And being from the South and the accent I carry, that's been very difficult for me. And there's been numerous times I thought I was saying one thing and I was actually saying something else. But it's been a long process. Most people can pick up a language in a year or two if they're fully immersed in that culture. But for us, it's been longer because we go back and forth really between an international English culture and then your typical Thai language culture when we're outside of the school.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you have plans on trying to teach your daughter the second language then, Thai?
Oh, yes, we already have. There's already a few words that she knows in Thai, and we like her to show respect, especially when we're around older Thais. And to be honest, it sort of helps. It's very funny when we're out and about, and an older Thai person will see her, and they know she's white. They have a word called Farong. That's the word they use for all foreigners, basically. And they'll be hesitant because she knows Down syndrome, but then she'll say hello in Thai, and she'll do a Y, that's sort of where you bow, and they'll smile, and then they'll come over and play with her. So we're really using it sort of, I don't know if we're not trying to manipulate, but we're using it as a way for
a bit of an icebreaker. Sort of,
yeah, as an icebreaker, exactly, and showing them that, you know what, our daughter does have Down syndrome, but she's still going to say what she's supposed to say and be polite and show you the proper respect. And it's really interesting how you sort of see them sort of break down a little bit and come and talk to her and play with her and smile. And it's been really encouraging.
Well, that's brilliant there. Has Marley visited the, has she come back to her parents' home country and visited the family?
Yes. One of the great things about working at an international school and being teachers, we get summers off. So we follow the same school calendar as the state.
Okay.
So we're usually off June and July. So almost every summer we come back to the states to visit family. But then we also do some therapy through the states. Then we do some checkups, and we have a speech therapist in the states and a developmental therapist, and they write programs for us and give us updates. And actually, my wife, she wanted teaching. Marley was born. That was not our original plan, but she decided to stay at home and actually help Marley with her development. So we do a lot of home therapy that we do evaluations in the States, and then we come back and we do them here, and then we do therapy here. So yeah, Marley, she's traveled to the States 3 or 4 times. It's always a nightmare because usually from the time we leave Bangkok until we get to North Carolina is about 24 hours.
Wow.
And there's usually about a 12 to 14 hour flight in there. And it's not easy being on a plane with a 3 or 4 year old, regardless if they have Down syndrome or not.
Right,
so it's
right.
always a challenge for us and the jet lag. But she really enjoys coming to the States and seeing her grandparents and meeting her cousins and doing all those type of things.
Yeah. I just had a question there a second ago. I should have wrote it down, but it slipped my mind now. But I'm probably going to remember it here in the next few minutes or so. But do you, oh boy, I wish I could remember that question now. Yeah, I get to that point where I think of something and then something else pops into my head and it disappears. What does she think of America? I know that's one question.
She loves it. To her, it's a 2 month playtime. Because since we only come home once a year, of course, our grandparents, my mother and then my wife's father and mother, they spoil her and they do everything for her. And it actually sets us back a little bit in our therapy and development because, they just want to just, take complete care of her all the time. And it's nice and it's enjoyable and she loves them. But she gets a lot of attention when we come to the States and, sometimes it's good. Sometimes it takes us a few weeks when we get back to help her understand she's not the center of the universe and
yeah.
sort of get her back in a regular routine and understand she can't just do anything she wants to do. But it's always exciting to see her with her grandma.
I know what that question was now, Jack. The title of your book, Failing at Fatherhood, does that kind of give the connotation that maybe you thought you had done something wrong, or I think you mentioned historically people in the past actually thought that the sins of the father were passed on to the son, so to speak.
Yeah. It's the title is sort of twofold, and the first one is exactly what you're saying, sort of going back to sort of what Jesus said. I don't know how many of our viewers are Christian or spend much time in the work, but they go to Jesus and they ask, why is this guy blind? Is it because something he did or his father? And he says that it's to so God can be glorified, and that's what I wrestled with at first. I had a belief, almost as some of the ties do, that I had done something wrong, that I was being punished, that my daughter had Down syndrome because of sort of the sins of the father. And it took me a while to get over that and to really realize that the whole problem was when Marley was born, I only thought about me. I thought about what had I done wrong. I thought about how this would affect my life. I thought about how people would view me. And that was the problem. I saw it as something that was going to change my life, that something was going to be a burden for me, and it was never about Marley. And that led to the second part of how I failed her as a father the first year of her life. And at the end of the book, I write a note to her apologizing because I was a worthless father that first year. I was just terrible to be around. I was depressed. I didn't want to be around my wife. I had this deep hatred for my wife because I wanted to blame her for the reason Marley had Down syndrome. I had this separation from my daughter because all I could think about was her having Down syndrome. I didn't want to care for her. I didn't want to spend time with her. And it was really difficult. I mean, I almost treated her as something unwanted, as something that I didn't want to be part of. And that whole first year, I really was an absentee father. I was in the house and I went to work and I came home, but that was it. I was not there to help care for her. I was not there to love her. And that's really what it talks about. It talks about how I failed that first year and how, it really was a difficult time and difficult on my marriage and my faith. And that it hurts me to think there's other fathers feeling the same thing. And that there's other fathers out there that are hurting and they just walk away and they abandon the situation because they can only look at what's happening in that current moment. And I'm very thankful that there were people in my life that encouraged me, that helped me to just fight through that first year and to really do some soul searching and really work out some issues. I feel like as men especially, we don't want to do that. We just want to suppress everything. And that's what I was trying to do. And it was almost what broke me. And it finally took some serious time with some people to really work through those issues and to really talk about what I was really feeling and being honest and saying that I didn't like what was going on. I hated what was going on, and that I really had to work through some of those things. So the title is really twofold. It's number one, as you said, about why did this happen and why is this a life that I now have? And then the second part is how I failed and why I failed and how I hope to help other fathers not reach that point and to offer them some advice. It's not do this, do that. It's more of this is what helped me. This is some of the dark demons that I faced and some of the deep pain and thoughts of leaving. And this is what helped get me to this point. And it's still a struggle. I mean, I'm still working through things today and I'm still doing counseling and I'm still trying to be the father I'm called to be. But the difference is I now love my daughter and I'm seeing how wonderful she is and how much she's blessing other people and she's blessed me. I don't see her as something that's broken. I see her as something that's beautiful and something that has changed my life.
Well, I think I'll make this the last question for you there, Jack. What actually brought you out of this depression and the way you were feeling for that first year?
There were really, I would say there were three things. Number one, it was being honest about what I believed and being honest with God. I feel like a lot of times, whether we believe in God or not, we're not really willing to question and look at our own faith. And I did that a lot. I would spend time alone, and I would really share out loud, audibly, how I felt, the disappointment I felt, the anger I felt. And it brought me a peace being able to really open up and share those things. The second thing were other families. I found support groups and I found this vast community of people that were willing to talk to me. Just like we're talking today, I would call a family and they would talk with me for hours and just tell me what they had done, what they had experienced. They were very honest and open and just the realities of raising a child with Down syndrome and the joys and the hardships. And then finally, the last thing I did, I started interacting with my daughter. I said the only way I'm going to understand and appreciate and love her is by spending time with her. And I forced myself to do that. And there would be time that we would go swimming, we would go to the playground, just the two of us, and I do it now. I'd spend time with her. And I really spend quality time with her, and I play, and I read her books, and I built a relationship with her. And those three things combined over a long year and a difficult year really helped me to reach the point I am now. And I really want to stress, I haven't figured it all out, and I'm still struggling. But the difference is I've realized that my daughter is just like any other daughter, and she needs a father, and I love her, and I'm thankful for her.
Well, that's absolutely good. Did you want to add anything else about the book? Or I'm actually going to put the link back in the chat room again for everybody to go to.
Yeah, the main thing is whether you want to check out the book or not, you know, that's completely up to the audience. But I would really encourage you to go to our website, If They Had a Voice, and just look at it and share it with your community. And if you encounter people that are struggling with a child with Down syndrome or a prenatal diagnosis, please feel free to share our information and get them in touch with us. We don't force anyone to buy anything, and we openly will share whatever materials we have and what support groups we have found, and just be there for other people. If there weren't people that were willing to give their time to me, I would have ended up in a very different place. And those people that were willing to sacrifice their time for me made a huge difference. And the audience, you can do the same thing. Just when you see someone hurting and you know they're struggling, don't just assume that they'll get over it and life will move on. Spend some time with them and really encourage them and support them. And it can be a great reward if you're willing to do that.
What's the URL for that website, Jack?
It's If They Had a Voice, so ifehehadavoice.org. So it's If They Had a Voice. So the idea is if that unborn child had a voice to talk to his or her mother, what would they say? You know, what would they tell that mother that's expecting that child with Down syndrome? So it's If They Had a Voice.
Okay. I'm just trying to put that in there. .org.
Yes.
If They Had a Voice. If They Had a
if
Voice.
If They Had a Voice. Yes.
.org. Okay. I think I got that right. I'm going to try that. But no, I will Yeah, I'll actually go to that myself. So, there it is. Okay. You just put that in the Skype chat for me, so I'll just transfer that. But anyways, I thank you for coming on, and I do thank your friend Catherine for getting me in touch with you.
Yes, she's actually my book promoter, and she's done a fantastic job, and she's actually also started a website about the book that's pretty easy to find. If you just do a Failing at Fatherhood search, you can pull up her website. I'm also on a blog. I blog quite often for My Big Jesus, so there's different ways you can connect with us. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, so pretty much if you just type in Failing at Fatherhood, you can find us and you can find information about us, and we love to make connections with people and to offer them insight any way we can, and to really just bring more awareness to Down syndrome and our experiences with it.
All right. And thank you once again, and give everyone in the family a hug and a kiss, right?
Yes, we appreciate that. I think they're finally starting to get out of bed, so I think I hear.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I got you out of bed early. Now maybe you can get you a nap.
We'll see. Maybe, maybe not.
And thanks for coming on again, Jack.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right,
everyone. That was just a special little hour show there. I asked Fairport for the stream there, and he was gracious enough to give it back to me, give it to me. So I will let the stream go and let anyone who wants it have it. I will see everyone next Wednesday. I'm Stephen Roberts. It's been Cancel the Cabal on PeoplesInternetRadio.com, PSN Radio, and Liberty Beacon Radio. Thank you, everyone.